Welcome to Nuanced Judaism, coming to you from OU Torah.
I'm Simi.
And I am Rivka.
Okay, so you mentioned to me what you were going to discuss in a class last week, and I thought it was a really cool structure of an idea.
Right, about tzniut.
Yes, so you basically were able to structure it out in a way, look, I don't spend that much time studying the laws of tzniut, but I suppose after you described it to me, perhaps I should. But the thing that struck me was the map you sort of made that allowed me, at least, to fit in different categories of law and philosophy into different sort of pockets. And when the minute you can categorize and organize something into sections, it becomes more real and more relatable.
True. Just two things. First of all, I did not create the structures for Rabbi Manning, who's coming out with a book on the subject soon, but I could never create the structure. You have to be both in breadth and in depth, very, very learned in halacha to be able to come up with such a structure. However, saying that, I very much agree with you. Specifically with a heated, sensitive topic like tzniut, which is often translated as modesty, although I try not to, separating different issues is key. Kind of like when you have a relationship and you're not happy with a relationship. A very powerful thing to do is focus on exactly what is bothering and what is not bothering you. So that way you're able to focus on the good and focus on the bad and know exactly where you're holding and where you stand.
Excellent, excellent. So in the name of Rabbi Manning, how would you play it out? Is it needed?
Why is it needed? Okay, so there's different reasons. First of all, empowerment. To know exactly where the law of tzniut comes from and who is it geared towards. Where does clothing play an effect? Is it all about clothing? But we know that there's also other stuff that belongs in this category. Where are those things? Where are different genders involved, etc.? So for that reason, it's useful to have a map to know where does it pertain to me? Where does it not pertain to me? Where are my sensitive places and where am I completely chilled with it?
Okay, so if I had to repeat what you said, you're saying it basically cracks certain stereotypes. Stereotypically, we look at the idea of tzniut being basically about what women decide they should wear or they shouldn't wear.
Correct.
Or what they're told to. And there's I suppose you could say there's a, it's all structured around that. Which
so
can
for
have
example, a... for example, a woman might come into a certain community wearing something very small that offends people. And the way it'll be described is she wasn't tsanua. Now, that could be the case. I'm not saying it isn't. But that is not usually what they're actually referring to. What they're actually referring to, as we're going to discuss in a minute, is that this lady is not sensitive to the minhag, to the customs, the binding customs of that specific place, which is an important thing in and of itself. It just may not have anything to do with tzniut.
Okay, so... how would you play it out? How would you open
it? Rabbi Manning does it, and I don't mess with something that's this good, so I'm just going to repeat what he said, is he structured in six different mitzvos. Now, some of these have absolutely nothing to do with tzniut, but sociologically and psychologically, they do. So,
wait a minute, it's probably worth pointing out that tzniut generally refers or translates as modesty.
Yes, so usually people translate as, you know, v'atznea lecha semashal malokecha, to walk modestly with God. So tzniut is usually translated as modesty, but a lot of it gets lost with the connotations of modesty. Because if I tell you what does modesty mean, what do you answer?
Well, it's tricky because I'm already in the context of having a conversation and thinking about what I'm saying, about what you shouldn't, like, I shouldn't walk outside in the street without a shirt on. And
correct.
That goes...
So the tzniut is a lot more overarching and a lot bigger than that. And I like translating it as innerness rather than modesty. Because innerness, first of all, is not so abused and used, but it's more pertaining to what we really mean. Which leads us to category number one. What is the actual core principle of tzniut? As mentioned in the Torah, as mentioned in Pirkei Avos, in Mishlei, in Micha, none of these places mention anything to do with gender. And none of these places talk about anything to do with clothing. They're talking about the ethical imperative of living a soul-powered life. A life where
you're... So what do you mean by a soul-powered life?
Living a type of life where you don't need to be influenced by other people's opinions on you. Where it's you and God, and that's what matters.
So you're not saying... you should be influenced by people. If you're doing something...
Yeah,
you're not
course.
Living up to your own values. Okay, you want people to point that out.
That's a good discussion in and of itself. How much should society affect you?
So what you're 100%. Saying is, so you're saying that the idea is to is that you should be in a relationship with God, and that should affect how you act only.
Well, obviously, being in a society, choose yourself a society that will affect you to the good, because society will affect you. But what I mean is this: is don't just be righteous because other people are watching. Don't do mitzvahs because people are watching. Do mitzvahs from an inner base place. Have a relationship with God where it doesn't matter who's watching. Rather, it's about your dignity. So even tzniut's dignity is a better example, is a better translation. So in Micha and in Pirkei Avos, you talk about the huge, huge priority of tzniut. So much so that like it's one of the ones that they mention over and over again. However, in the Torah, we actually have a commandment of men when they're in war and they need the bathroom. And this is a type of place where testosterone is running high in camp. But they shouldn't just go to the bathroom just in the middle of anywhere. They have to go out with a shovel and bury their excrement. And that is showing us that even in a place where it would be normal to be animalistic, because who cares? God is there. So too, in your home, where it's private and... who cares? God is there.
So it's God consciousness.
God consciousness even without people watching.
So the principle would be, if I'm walking around in the street or I'm walking around at home, the assumption is when I'm at home and no one's watching, a God conscious individual will act as if there is a presence in his life.
Correct.
And that presence is the ultimate presence. Correct. And thereby he will act in a way. So yes. How would you finish that?
He would act in a way
with that awareness.
Put it this way. He would act in a way that is honoring the spiritual part of him rather than the animalistic part of him. So if you're in Barbados and everybody's acting in a certain way, and it would be the most normal thing in the world to act that way, you would think twice because you are still a soul.
So it's actually interesting you say that, because this principle of war, we have that idea play itself out throughout the Torah. The idea that you'll have extreme examples being given, and the extremity of the concept is treated in a way, and thereby you can make
filter
a deduction.
Right.
So, for example, a person who's working for you, you're obligated to treat them well. You're obligated to...
A slave even.
Exactly.
Right.
A thief, a poor person. Anybody who you would have assumed would be on the lowest rung of society... The Torah goes out of its way to express the need for dignity and humanity in that respect.
So even more so your neighbor or whatever it is.
So in the Sneas context, in an area where you would expect almost to get
a bunch of men in a battlefield to be like,
sexist,
oh, who cares, right?
Especially in discussion of Sneas.
Right, but like a bunch of guys in a battlefield.
Well, you'd expect a pass. You'd expect a somewhat of a pass.
Right, and here we don't get it. We get that God is in the battle camp with you, so... treat yourself with dignity. And it's treat yourself. Very much honor yourself. Have dignity for yourself. Anyway, so that's the overarching principle of tznias. And this obviously can lead to very interesting conversations of how does that actually pan itself out in nowadays, in practicality. Does that mean I won't go to the bathroom with the door open? Does that mean I'm not going to use vulgar speech even when I'm alone? It could be anything, right? But it's an overarching principle rather than clothes.
It's like a discipline. You're disciplining your life to act in a way as if there is a presence that is demanding something of you.
Correct. And you also want to train yourself from the outside in to treat yourself like a soul rather than like an animal that can talk.
Great.
Right? Okay, well that's the first category. And we're up to 9 minutes. So the second category is what you would call dress. And it's mostly for women, although if you look at different cultures and in Judaism, you see plenty of men who actually cover up more than women. But this talks about dress. So where do they get this from? Because back in the day in the Talmud, everybody was wearing robes, so there wasn't really these questions. But you get this from the ketuvah, from the Sota and from Dasya Hoodis. Dasya Hoodis is the customs, binding customs, that over time a society has taken on upon themselves. This could be anything from colors to lengths to jewelry to anything really. But if you decide to belong to that culture, to that society, you take on their customs. And this is something very easy to understand if you understand kidneys. Sephardim eat green beans, Ashkenazim don't. It's a minhag, but it's binding. You can't just say, oh, it's stupid, I'm not going to do it. Because a minhag is under the laws of vows. And if you live in a society, they've taken on a certain vow, it is binding. It's not necessarily the overarching thing of tznias, but it's very connected to it. That's Dasi Hudas. That's to do with skirt lengths, collars, etc. The third thing would be erva. Now, this is where things get a bit murky, because a lot of people think that erva and tznias are one and the same. Is that if a woman is showing her erva, thereby she's not tzenua. Now,
you want often, for like, so we want to define erva here, or is that too
erva,
much of a conversation?
No. Erva is simply it's just like Dasi Hudis is more of a woman's thing. Erva is completely for men. It is when men may not make a blessing in front of certain female body parts. This is a longer discussion, but basically that's the mitzvah. And what you can thereby infer is if a man can't make a blessing, thereby the woman is doing something wrong. But that's a fallacy there. And I'll give you a reason why. You can have...
Just let me break that down, just what you're saying. You're saying that the category of erva, the way you're describing the third category here, is that it's on when a male can or cannot make a blessing, learn Torah, do things of a spiritual nature.
Correct. Now, it's very easy to infer that, I'm a man, I can't make a blessing because you're doing something wrong. Now, sometimes that might be the case. She might be walking around not keeping to Dasi Hudis or not keeping to tznias in general, thereby I can't make a blessing. But it's not always the case because it's two separate things. So for example, a husband in his home may not be able to make a blessing in front of his wife who is wearing a tank top and pajamas. She is not breaking any law of tznias, of Dasi Hudis, as anything. It's in her home. He just happens not to be able to make a blessing at that point because of erva. That's fine. It's different things. Now, they often sociologically will overlap, but we have to be very clear that a woman keeping tznias, it's not because of a man's commandment for erva. A man can close his eyes.
Fair.
Okay. Fourth category, appropriate sexual behavior. Oftentimes talking about men, but women also have this to a certain extent. It's what you're supposed to gaze at, what you're supposed to fantasize about, not fantasize about, etc. Again, those things are mostly for men. And just because...
What category of law does this go under?
Lo sasuru achari levavchem v'achari neichem. Do not stray of your eyes and your heart. Right? So it's connected, because if you have a woman who's inappropriately dressed, it will maybe make it harder for the guy, but it's a guy's mitzvah. It's a guy's command.
It's a focus on the man, but it's not to put a...
100% focus on the man. Now, we have the fifth commandment. The fifth category. Fifth category.
You sure that wasn't the fifth?
No. Okay. That's the fourth. The fifth category is a general halacha of Ben Adam L'Chaveiro called Lifnei Iver Lo Sitel Mechshol, which means that if you have somebody who you know has a certain weakness and is likely to stumble, don't make it hard for them. Don't make it easy for them to stumble. So Lifnei Iver, before a blind person, do not put a stumbling block.
So this is where category 2 and category 5 get really heated.
Right.
Because one's referring to clothes, the other one's referring to
a stumbling block. So a lot of people will learn that the reason that I, as a woman, have to cover up is because you will stumble. That is not correct. That is mixing potatoes and oranges. I have to dress a certain way because of general tznias and because of my dasi hudas. And there is a separate mitzvah of, if I am sensitive to somebody's sensitivities, I won't put a stumbling block. But it's two separate mitzvahs.
I think so, that's probably where the clashing happens.
And also the shame of it.
I have to cover up because of
you can't
his weakness.
Exactly. So again, he has a separate commandment to keep his eyes to himself and his thoughts to himself. I, however, can now look at this commandment of lifna either as an empowering thing, because if I decide to go to an ultra-Orthodox community and I decide to dress in a certain way, on the one hand, it may or may not be part of tznias. That's a different discussion. What exactly is tznias and not in practicality? But I can feel empowered that I am doing a separate mitzvah of lifnei iver. And the sixth one is very similar. Simple, v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. So we have to remember that tznias might be a commandment that's very much within you and within yourself. But expression-wise, it's very external. So if you're going into a society that is expecting a certain thing, whether or not you agree with it, it is a nice thing not to make people feel uncomfortable. And the flip side, if you are bothered by the way somebody is dressing or the way somebody is acting, you still have the commandment of v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, to either not say anything or to be extremely sensitive. One thing does not take away the other thing.
So to clarify the categories, you have six categories. The first one is more of an overarching principle.
Correct.
The second category is the way you've described it, is the one that is most focused on dress.
And the most nitty-gritty.
Yeah, but the reason why I think it's really interesting is because the last two categories are perhaps not expressed the way you just expressed them. The last three categories.
What do you
mean? Is a commandment on people not to go after their
lusts,
eyes.
And
it, exactly. Yes. Which is more of a focus on, well, it's everybody, really. It's not a man. I don't think it's a man thing. It's a thing that a person is supposed to try and withhold from going down a certain road.
Correct. Again, it's identifying with their soul.
Which is moving down to the more base instinct. We shouldn't be the type of people as human beings that give into that dopamine kick when we see something inappropriate that we know is feeding some sort of...
Okay. Well, you were saying that doesn't actually...
What is the word I'm looking for? That feeds some sort of like desire in the brain from it, like either a visual or a conceptual standpoint that you know will lead us away from our, let's say, mission or purpose.
Who we want to be.
We're referring you back to that first principle of the God consciousness type of person.
Correct. So those are
the last
connected.
Two, which once again are also very much overarching philosophical themes. You've got the not to go after your eyes, the idea of a stumbling block, and lastly about loving your neighbor. Now the stumbling block, once again, you describe that as empowerment, but the last one goes on both sides of the fence.
Exactly.
Both sides are obligated to attempt to develop themselves into the type of people that love their fellow.
Correct.
That
which
should
means,
temper everything.
Exactly. Which means that even
could
if
be why
you don't,
I made it come in at the end.
Right. Which means that even if you don't agree with the society's choice or the way they've evolved with their cultural choices, you can still be sensitive to them. And that also means that if you're in a part of a culture where you just don't understand how this person could act in a certain way, you can still treat them as a part of the family.
Wow. Okay. Happy the way that you phrase that?
Hope so. I hope it's clear.
Okay, guys, have a wonderful week.
Have a wonderful week.